بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. You often hear the word fitna. Seldom do we take the time to understand the exact meaning of fitna. Fitna, when used in the Quran or the Hadith, sometimes it refers to punishment. ذُوقُوا فِتْنَتَكُمْ. And sometimes when the word fitna has been used, it refers to a situation where you can't figure out what is right, what is wrong. Who is right and who is wrong, you can't make out. There's a whole controversy carrying on about chickens. Now, who is right and who is not right, you can't make out. You're hearing this side's argument and you're hearing the argument on the other side, but you're not in a position of deciding that who is on the right and who is not on the right. So then this becomes a fitna. If you are going to take one side, then you don't have any proof for that. If you don't have any proof for that, then you will be also a sinner. Why? Because you didn't have any proof. You just sided one, perhaps on grounds of emotions or sympathy or friendship, because I find myself aligned more to this group, therefore I joined up with them. I saw myself more inclined towards that group, so I aligned myself with that group. So it was not on the basis of truth and falsehood, it wasn't on the basis of reasoning and proof, it was just on sympathetic reasons of sympathy or friendship, etc., etc. So then this becomes another fitna. So you don't know where the truth lies, but you just joined one group just on account of sympathy or friendship. So this is what is called fitna, where you don't know where the truth lies. Obviously, where you are sure about where the truth lies, then you will support the truth. You will support it, or you will side with it, or you will practice the truth. If you can't support it, you cannot be active in promoting the truth. So you will remain quiet, but you will do that which you feel is right. So that is when you can determine, you can ascertain, you can verify what is the right. But when you can't verify, you can't ascertain, then what should you do? Then you remain out of the whole thing. Don't be on this side and don't be on the other side. You just come out of it clearly and remain silent. Now that's a difficult one. To talk about it or to listen to it, that you feel excitement. But to remain absolutely silent, that's difficult, very difficult. Now, I must remain absolutely silent. I must remain absolutely quiet about it. Don't talk about it and don't even listen to it. Yes, that's a solution. We don't even talk about it and don't even listen to it. It's finished. You killed that whole masla was killed. Why? You didn't even talk about it and you didn't take the pains to even listen to it. So that thing didn't pass your mind at all. Khalas, end of the story. Like a person living in a farm, now he doesn't know what's going on. So that fitna doesn't appeal to him. It doesn't attract him. But now he heard this in the farm over the radio or something, over the transmitter, something's carrying on, and he's taking a keen interest in that. Now he can get roped into it, get lured into it. So therefore the hadith says that إِذَا أُمِلَتْ بِالْمَعَاسِي فِي الْأَرْضِ فَمَنْ حَضَرَهَا وَكَرِهَهَا كَانَ كَمَنْ غَابَ عَنْهَا. When there is a wrong that takes place in some part of the world, and then someone is present there. He is present there, but he doesn't like to be there. He doesn't like it. Whatever is going on, he doesn't like it. So he will be counted amongst those that were not there on the site. A simple example is like you are traveling by plane, right? And there are people that are drinking wine here. There's television going on. There's women that are not dressed correctly. Now, you don't like this type of environment. you don't like the environment, but you have to travel, you have to go home, whatever else, you have to travel, but you dislike this type of environment, then Allah Ta'ala will count you like a person that wasn't there at all. But on the contrary, one woman, غَابَ عَنْهَا, the one that was not there, but he had a liking for it, then كَانَ كَمَنْ حَضَرَهَا, you were not there, but you were longing that had you only been there, right? If, for example, there was some beauty queen contest in some of the casinos or Wild Coast, wherever else, right? Now, late on you discover all this thing took place. And now you're scratching at, hey, had I only been there, you know? And, you know, what fun I missed out, you know, what they were showing, and I really missed out. You know, this type of girls and how they were stripping and whatever else. So, you have a deep remorse that you went there. You went there, but you have a remorse that why weren't you there? So, kana kaman hadara, you will be counted like the person that was there actually. So, in this day and time, you have this type of situations where you are living in a place or you're moving in a place where there is problems. So, within your heart, what should you be doing? Within your heart, you should be distasteful. You should not like have a liking, inclination, no inclination for it. Like someone unfortunately has to be living in Spingo Beach, right in front of the beach, right? Now it is Christmas season. And we know all the hell breaks loose there. Literally, not just in words, but really, really all the hell breaks loose there. Doesn't it break loose? See, naked people, and they're doing all types of things happening there, right? But now you are living there. You can't avoid the place. So you are living there, but you can't avoid the place. When you can't avoid the place, then you must feel disillusioned, you must feel distasteful, you must feel, no, it's not a good place, I don't like this. Try your best not to see what's going on. And within your heart, you must hate it, dislike what's going on. So, though you are living right there, you will not be counted amongst those that are living there. But if you are living on the other end of Spingo Beach, like here, and then when all this nonsense is taking place and going on, and then you are longing that, had I only had my house there, you know, at this time, at any time, you could just watch what's going on, who's coming in, what's a new show. You know? So, you will be counted as though you are part of the whole fitna, you see. So, at the time of fitna, what is a Muslim required to do? Right? Sahaba Ikram, radiallahu anhum, Allah Ta'ala, be pleased with them, and shower the graves with millions and millions of mercies all the time. So they were very eager to know that these circumstances may come up. When these situations do come up, then what do we do? This is one example that I'm quoting, you know, of woman, etc., or of chicken, etc. There can be many other issues that can come up in the ummah, and then it takes the shape of a fitna, it takes the form of a fitna, then what do we do? So they wanted to know, so that they are well braced in advance of a situation, before the situation can actually come up, they are well braced, they have prepared themselves, alright, this thing is coming up, so how should we behave? What do we do? How would we conduct ourselves? So Rasulullah indicated three suggestions. He gave three pieces of advice. One is Amlik alayka lisanak. Number one is don't let your tongue control you, but you be in control of your tongue. One is your tongue is controlling you, it just moves. You just let it drive, just let it move. And the other is this, that Amlik alayka lisanak, you be in control, full control of your tongue. Okay. Really, the tongue lets the person down. If you just keep quiet, you can avoid a lot of trouble, you can save yourself from a lot of situations. Just look after your tongue. In most situations, you go and see the problem, investigate now where this problem started off from, then it starts off from the tongue. So if you can just control your tongue, be in control of your tongue. Don't let the tongue control you. Rather, you be in control of your tongue. Just keep quiet. One person heard this bayan about tongue, you see. So he was having a ding-dong match with his wife. Whenever he's stepping into the house, and the wife is giving it to him. Some women are like that now. The whole day's frustration, that heat of the stove, they have to offload it somewhere. Chula, chula ki garmi. At the time he was using coal stoves, you see, so that more heat. So that heat has to be offloaded somewhere. So whenever he steps into the house, again the wife is giving it to him. Again he steps into the house, the wife is giving it to him. Now he heard the bayan, he must keep quiet, so he kept quiet. But now till when? Till which point? So as he went into the house, now the wife let him have it. So he raised up his hand, O Allah, either I die. Before you can say, oh, you die, she picked up the velan, you know, they make the roti. She picked up the velan. When he says, either I die, then the wife says, oh, who? Or either I die. Instead of saying, either I die or you die, either I die or I die. See? So this is a test. See, this is a test. People have tests in different ways. You must consider this as a test. Now, Imam Abu Hanifa and Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal, I told you about the test, you know, being lashed in that circumstances in front of everybody. Abu Hanifa Rahmatullah had died in that. They poisoned him and he was dead. He died in that. Then this is not only confined to the Khulafa'i Rashidin, or only confined to this Imma. Even the Khulafa'i Rashidin, all of them had died in this type of circumstances. Rasulullah Paksasam was poisoned, right? And that effect of the poison had led to his death. If you look at the Sirat, it was the effect of the poison that led to the death. So that was also a type of Shahadat. Then you look at Hazrat Abu Bakr Siddiq radiallahu anhu. He was seated with Haris ibn Kalda, Arab physician, very great physician in Arab lands. And they were served some meals. Perhaps they were traveling, whatever it was. And they were served with some meals. So Abu Bakr took a morsel and this Haris took a morsel. So Haris, from the taste, he made out exactly that this is poisoned. When he made out it was poisoned, then he even grabbed Abu Bakr's hand, that this morsel, don't take it into your mouth. So he says, no, that morsel is already down. Abu Bakr says that morsel is already down. It's already gone into the system. So Haris ibn Kalda says, well then, you know what's going to happen? Within this year, both of us will die. This poison is such, the effect of this poison is such, okay, within this year, both of us, you will die and I will die. And true to his word, Haris ibn Kalda also died. And not long after that, Abu Bakr also died, radiallahu anhu. Both of them died that same year. So the actual reason for his death also was this poison. Then you find that Umar radiallahu anhu, he was also killed, right? Abu Lulu, that was the person that was his assassin, he killed him. Then you look at Usman radiallahu anhu, he was also assassinated by those rebels, right? They laid a siege to his house and they had killed him, right? Then you look at Ali radiallahu anhu, Ibn Muljim, he was the one that assassinated him, right? So all of them had to go through this. So we got it very light. We got it, just the wife who says some things, we just keep quiet. They did the real sacrifice. And on your side, you just listen to these stories. Listen to it. Allah Pak gave 2 ears. Mawlana Qaji from Phoenix, he says, Allah Pak gave 2 ears. One to listen and the other to just take out. Isn't it an easy solution? Want to listen, or they told you something. So if it's really applicable to you, you take it in. Not applicable, then just take it out, finish. You just sift it, and you see it's applicable to you, take it down. Otherwise, you just move it out. Simple as that, right? So this is going to happen. It must happen. Whether it's a business, whether it's in life, whether it's at home, somewhere or the other, this thing must happen. You want to know, it must be a carefree, no problem, problem-free life. It won't happen. It'll never happen. You must have some problem. This is planet Earth. You came here. You came with a baggage of problem also. You don't come free of problems. Must happen. All these great awliya ikram, they also went through a lot of difficulties. Great difficulties. Look at these great awliya of India and elsewhere as well. You find all of them had gone through great difficulties. One Buzurg was teaching in Sahanpur. He was a Mulana also. He was teaching in Sahanpur. So his wife gives him uphill all the time uphill. In the old days, it was the uneducated girls that used to give the husband uphill. Now the educated ones give you more uphill. So uphill all the time. Now, he was one of the senior ustads there in Sahanpur. So his friends, they got to know about it. Okay, he's getting an uphill here. So they told Mona, you know, there are enough girls. If there's nobody that's prepared to give you their daughters, we'll give you our daughters. But this, we can't see you going through this. So Mona says, there can be one of two situations. I can either divorce her, right? After I divorced her, what would happen to her? Either she would remain a widow for the rest of her life, she would be in suffering, in misery, in hardship, that she will remain a widow for the rest of her life, right? Won't she suffer? Won't she be in difficulty? So that can be one situation. And the other situation is that she remarries. In the event she remarries, the problem that was coming to me will go to the new husband. So why can't I make ikram? Why can't I make ikram for the new husband? Right? See that, Hafizji? We think ikram is only in the tabligh jamaat. Going tabligh jamaat, make ikram, passing the food, whatever else. If his godru is out, then this one cover him up with the godru. This is ikram, you're starting at home. What? Ikram, and you're starting at home. We can make ikram for everybody else. Can't we make it for our own wives? Listen to a little bit of the nonsense, a little bit of the difficulty, but we listen to it, just tolerate, finish. End of the story. There was another Buzurg, Maulana Muzaffar Hussain Sahib, very great Buzurg, very, also of India. You know, you may have heard of Maulana Muhammad Ilyas and all these people here. So he's coming in that ancestry. So it is his piety that flowed down right through the generations. So you can imagine now what a great personality he must have been. Now, he was now, see, about 1.5, 2 centuries away from now. So, if he had a problem anywhere, then he will go to the site, he will try and sort it out. If someone needs advice, he will advise it. If someone is oppressing his wife, he will go and sort that out. If the wife is wrong, he will go and advise her. So he was a man like that. And most of his traveling he will do by foot. No car that time. Just staying on your car, travel by foot. Even Hajj also, several Hajj he made, he went and traveled by foot. And he passed away in Madinah Munawwara. So he went and gave one bayan. He heard that there were some people that are Shias this side, so he went and gave one bayan there. So some of them made Toba, so known as Shiaism is too bad, we'll come make Toba and come right. So one bright woman, she says, well, I'm accepting Sunni, I'm becoming a Sunni, but who's going to marry me? Who's going to make nikah to me? If you prepare to make nikah with me, then I'll become a Sunni. Right? For a moment, just stop there. You don't try these things. That was Maulana Muzaffar Hussain Sahib, right? He had that level of endurance. He could withstand all these things. You're not like him. You become like him, then imitate him. So he says, all right, we'll make the nikah. We'll make the nikah. He made the arrangements. Now, to leave a Shia stronghold is not an easy thing. So they made a plan, all right, at this time of the night, you come at this spot. Maulana sent his men, and they brought her. They brought her across. By times these people came to know about it, it was too late. They gave the chase, but they were out of reach. Anyway, but Maulana had it like this. He was very, very firm on Talim. You know, they say nowadays, Tabligh Jamaat say Talim. Our problem is we only confine it to the Fazail Kitabs. Talim is not only Fazail Kitabs. To the Masail as well. Fazail and Masail. Best is ever, and the Fazail Kitabs. You'll find a lot of people coming that come and tell you, for 20 years we're reading our namaz wrong. 15 years we're reading our namaz wrong. Why they don't know the masail? Now then they hear about it, then they full of regrets. Now what do we do? 15 years we read our namaz wrong. So you must have some masail as well. If you can't speak to an alim or get something directly from him, then there's kitabs that are available. You refer to this kitab ongoing every day. Even if you are checking two maslas, there's two maslas every day. In 1 year, how much you learn? Approximately 700 maslas you learn in 1 year if two maslas were done every day. So in that way, all the important things in your life, there are how many people, one person came and he says, you know what, Mawlana, I'm 55 years of age, and many a times, just to threaten my wife, I say, talak, talak, talak. So asked him, that how many times did he say? No, a lot of times, over 100 times. But you're living in haram, you're living. Now they don't know the masail, so they have to be taught the masail as well, not only fazail. The masail as well. Fazail must be there. Because that fazail will create the thirst and the enthusiasm. But now, halal and haram, if they don't know halal and haram, and you tell them only do fazail, then are you prepared to take the responsibility if this person is going to haram? Are you prepared? I remember, just digressing a little bit, 1979, when I went for my first hajj. So at that time, there was a very strict prohibition on bringing any books through the country. It was the first hajj, I had my kitab, Mu'allimul Hujjaj, as a guide, see. So at the customs, they confiscated my kitab. So I told the custom officer, you're confiscating it, I don't mind, the money I don't mind. But remember, if I am going to do anything in hajj that is wrong, on the day of Qiyamah, I'll hold you responsible. Straight, I told him. He got into a panic and all that. He took me inside one room and said, no, don't ever tell me this. But take your kitab back. I don't tell him that was my first hajj. I don't know anything now. You don't know anybody around. So now, you going to do anything wrong? Who's going to be responsible? Now you need someone to guide you at each step. All right, haram, what do you do? You're going to Makkah, what do you do? What are the do's, what are the don'ts? Whatever else. So you need to have a guide. Now they were doing for good reasons. I won't say they're doing it for bad reasons. They had the right reasons. But I also had the right reasons to have the kitab with me. So anyway, we're talking about Mawlana. He was very strict on this talim, Mawlana Muzaffar Hussain Sahib. And he worked out his children, he would give them a time for talim. His first wife, some time for talim. And the second wife, that was the Shia, he would give her a time as well for the talim. This woman here, the Shia woman that became a Sunni, very wicked temper, very, very wicked temper. She wouldn't just allow Mawlana to come into the room. Mawlana was still outside. Not even the room, not even the house. She would lock up the door. Mawlana can't come in. Now look at the level of Mawlana's patience. That's what you must see. You know, in India, in the summers, the heat is also extreme, 45, 50 degrees, right? And then at night also it's so hot. At night also it's hot. Mosquitoes are doing their job, and the heat is also extreme. Then the winter is also very extreme. In that area, this Kandla and all these places, is very it's because it's near the Himalayas, so the winter is also extreme. So she won't let him come into the house. Mawlana won't say one word. What a frown. Nothing. Not knocking the door. Not pestering. Nothing. He will just leave his musalla or something outside. Engage his namaz. The moment he heard the fajr namaz, he'll knock the door. And then he will tell, Bi, maine raat ki haziri de di. Chalo, main masjid ko ja raha hoon. My duty was to give my duty was to present myself, right, at night, to give you a time at night. I completed my duty. My duty was to present myself. So I completed my duty. I have completed my duty. I am leaving now. I'm on my way out. You see that? To have that composure, is it easy? Now that I'm saying, this is a sacrifice for that, for today. This is a sacrifice, that endurance, a little bit. We have to look at the broader picture. We have to give this children talim, the wife child talim. Marriage is not just enjoyment. You see, when we interpret marriage, it's just enjoyment. Or go for holidays, hajj, umrah, enjoyment, etc. No, no. Party, go for a meal, go for a holiday, to the burghs, etc. We're not saying don't do it. But talim is like a faras in the house. On the day of Qiyamah, you didn't do that talim. Those children went and did haram, they went and did wrong. Like they'll be responsible for their wrong. They'll hold you also responsible. Okay, he was my father, he was my mother. They didn't tutor us, they didn't guide us as to what was right and what was wrong. Therefore we fell into this. So it's not just enjoyment. You know, we got a wrong picture of marriage. It's just enjoyment and thrill and frill. No, no. That's part of the whole package. The real thing is now what good your parents and your ancestors have passed on to you. You must pass it on to the next. Otherwise, there'll be situations where parents will come and complain about their children. The children are totally disobedient. I don't know how many cases I've heard already. How many cases where children become rebellious, they run out of homes, they're hitting their parents. How many cases? You get tired listening to those stories. Someone, the mother is getting bashed up, the father is getting bashed up. How many times I heard these stories? Sometimes the father's got an open wound. Who bashed you? My child bashed me. Got an open wound. Open wound he's got here, right on the face. So come and see them, see what happened. What happened? No, my child bashed me up. Why bashed you up? All, and these people can't go and mention this to anybody because they're coming from very affluent class, wealthy class, but now they can't contain the agony. See, he bashed me up, it's an open wound, I can't go and mention this to anybody. Because then my position in community, what will happen to it? So I told him, no, I told my child, must be a little bit respectful towards your mother, don't speak in this harsh manner. That was what I mentioned to the child, and the child couldn't hold his temper, and the way he gave me like this. So this is a result, I don't say always, but many a time it's a result of we not teaching those children what is respect, or what is talim. From the day one, from the child, the day the child is born. See, once you've got a child, you become a father, you father the child. From there, now you can't live the type of free life. Before you could father a child, all right, a little bit of freedom, it's all right. But now you fathered a child, now it's a responsibility. So what good your children, what your ancestors have passed on to you, you have to pass it on to them. So in your old age, in your middle age, your old age, they will show that respect. They will show that love. They know what's a father, they know what's a mother. So it's your own investment. Forget their investment, it's your own investment. Provided you taught them, you guided them, and you took them around. One of Manzoor Ahmad Nomani Sahib, rahmatullahi, most of us may have heard of him. So when he was here in South Africa, 74 I think he came, 73, 74. A lot of the places, Mawla Yunus Patel Sahib Marhum, he was accompanying him as well. Came to Miasam. We were studying at Miasam at that time. And I think Bhai Padi had a very strong relationship with him. So Bhai Padi had asked him, see, you've seen this country and you've seen our lives. So what do we do for the protection of our children? What do we do for the protection of our children? So he says, do this thing. Number one is, don't keep them unoccupied. Children have got a lot of energy, whether they are girls or they are boys, so you don't keep them unoccupied, unchecked. Not only unoccupied, but unchecked. You see, where a lot of wrong takes place is because either they are unoccupied or they are unchecked. So right till the time they are married, there must be total transparency, absolute transparency. Whether they're in the rooms, wherever they are, but there's absolute transparency. Unfortunately, you have to do it. You have to do it in this age. It's a must. You must do it. Otherwise, I don't know how many cases I've heard. I'm telling of the real cases that I've heard. You know, I may say over 50 cases I've heard, where children at the age of 4, 3, 5, they are undressing before rather a boy or a girl. They're getting into intimate postures, etc. 4, 5. Then it makes me wonder now, how did this child do this and where did he get this from? So the only answer that comes to my mind is perhaps there's two things that can come in my mind. One is perhaps the parents were doing something like this in the presence of the child. The parents were doing something like this in the presence of the child. Parents may have thought the child is asleep. Subconsciously, the child is registering what's going on. He wants to imitate. Right? Sometimes it happens that very innocently you give these children the cell phone, go and play with it. And he's going into different sites. He's watching what's happening, what's going on. Now, you see this child here, any child or any person for that matter, when you show him something, that he wants to go and experiment. You showed him something, what he wants to do. He wants to experiment, he wants to try it out. All right, he's doing it, why can't I do it? He's doing it, why can't I do it? Right? Sometimes it is like that. Sometimes it is that that child that your son is playing with or your daughter is playing with, she has that type of tendencies. She may have picked up somewhere. And worse than all is this, that the schools are teaching right living, right? And from the very, very primary classes, grade 3, grade 2, from them they are teaching them right living, that how do you kick up a relationship? You don't just go mad one shot. And then from grades 5, 6, 7, they give them condoms. Why are you giving them these things? Why are you teaching them about condoms? Why are you teaching them about all these different steps? So the children are going to experiment. They must experiment. You're giving them these things here, and you're showing them the steps, then what are you doing? You're leading them in that direction. So it's an evil. See, it's a calculated evil that's going on in the school. Now, for some reason, you can't take your children out of school from that environment. Then you need to undo what they are doing. If they are doing all this in school, then it's your child. Right? When it's your child, the respect that he's going to bring is your respect. The disgrace he's going to bring is your disgrace. Right? If people don't say in the masjid or in the town, they're going to say your child did this. It's an embarrassment for you. If you did any good, it was an achievement. It's going to be a praise for you. So from the beginning, you'll have to first understand the environment that you're living in, the surroundings that you're living in. You can't be oblivious of the surrounding. You have to understand the surroundings that you're living in. Right? And number two, then you have to put up procedures in place. Alright, this is what's going on. I'm sending my child. So what do I do? To undo all the evil that's happening in the school, in the environment, all these things here. My child will become a victim of these things here. What do I do for it? You understand? So if the parents don't take life as a fairy tale, you know, as an adventure and excitement, then they will put some structures in life. Now, our life is more or less like a fairy tale, an adventure. Come a weekend, you're just going to shopping mall here, there, buy this, get some ice cream for the children, take them around, but we have done our duty. I don't say don't do these things here, but the more important thing is to put values into the child. When that child tomorrow is going to leave your house, get married, right? Anybody, the husband is going to watch, the in-laws are going to watch what values this child has come with. Has he come with genuine values? Is he rotten in himself? They're not going to look at his looks. And they won't be so concerned about the money. They may be concerned, maybe 40% about the money. But really what they will look at is what values this child has come with. You know that in Atikaf just now, there was that Ra'is Bhai. So he's not an alim. Coming from a very good family. Very good family, near Muradabad. So he's telling me about his children and his daughters all married, proposed, whatever. And great ulama like Maulana Aqil Sahib, etc. Like in India now, presently, they are rated very high. They propose in his home. So it just made me think now, why did they propose in his home? Because he's from a village. And he's got farms, so they call him a dihati, they'll call him a dihati. You know, a villager, a farmer. But why did they propose in his home? They saw the simplicity in the house. They saw the simplicity, the modesty, the shame, and these values they saw. When they saw these values, they went and proposed in the house. See, so good people will come to your home when you have goodness prevailing within the home. You have modesty, shame, respect. All these things are values, are priceless values. You see, they are priceless values, and it's going to be you that's going to be instilling this into them. So I just explained about Maulana Muzaffar Hussain Saab and the difficulty that he had gone through, his wife. Understand? So this is the sunnah, is the way of these Buzurgan Adin. They always had this type of appeal with their wives. So if you experience something of this nature, then don't take it now. Why is it coming on my plate? Others may not discuss it, but definitely it happens to others, it happens to you as well. There's a famous story of one Buzurg. He was quite popular. People from far and wide used to come and visit him, take advice from him, etc. But his wife will never change her ways. Remained in that crooked ways, stupid ways, carried on that ways. Now he's thinking how to get this wife into this line here. You know? I need to get her to righteousness. She's just bent upon her evil ways. So one day he thought, let me do one karamat. If I do that karamat, she'll get impressed and then she'll follow. So he made dua, whatever else, and then he began to fly over the house. He made a couple of rounds, and he made that couple of rounds, he came and settled again. So the wife had something, had a field day, you know. You're talking of yourself as a buzurg. That man there was flying, he was that buzurg. Oh, was it? Is it? I said, yeah. Well, that was myself. Oh, that's why you were flying all crooked. So whatever you will do, they will have something to say about it. Someone will have something to say about it. What we need to do is look at the broader picture, give them talim, education, tarbiyat. These things, they don't worry about it. Don't worry about the thrills. You'll have to give them a little bit of entertainment, obviously. You can't allow the house to be totally dry. But the more important thing is that you'll have to give them this instruction, talim. Lead them up in that way. Hadhrat Shaykhul Hadith Sahib, Mawlana Muhammad Zakariya Sahib Rahmatullah, says that by the grace of Allah Ta'ala, our family daughters, whichever home they go into, they make a good home. Remember, if that girl goes, right, from your house, and she makes a good home, right, her happiness is your happiness. Her grief is your grief. No matter what you are, who you are, what position you hold, but her happiness is your happiness. Her grief is your grief. If every second day she's phoning up, hey, Abba, it's like this, Ma, it's like this here, don't you feel hurt about it? You're a man, you feel about it. But if you train her the right way, then she'll bring happiness. In that home, that happiness will reach you. So he says, we just teach them two things. One is we teach them the good, the correct Islamic character. And number two, we teach our girls how to be submissive. Submissive and show a good face. No matter who it is and what he's saying, be submissive, just cooperate. One is submissive, the number two is cooperate and show a good face. Now they are submissive, the mother-in-law is saying something, sister-in-law is saying something, or the husband is saying something, and they submissive, or you must do this, don't do this, do this, don't do this. Alright. Cooperating now, there is any function, you go and do this, you make the papar, or you make the kachuma, or whatever else. So she's doing, she's cooperating. Submissive, and number two is cooperating, and show a good face. Don't pull up your face for any small thing, big thing. Don't pull up your face. Right? For some women, it's better that they just keep quiet. Some women, it's better that they talk. Some women don't know what to say when. So when you don't know what to say when, then it's better for you just to keep quiet. They say that the mother-in-law used to speak to all her daughter-in-laws, and one daughter-in-law wouldn't speak at all. So the mother-in-law told her, "Boy, you must also speak. You know, everybody else speaks. They say whatever is in their hearts. You must also say something. You just keep quiet like a dead thing here. You know, you must speak." So she says, no, you know, my mother advised me, I must just keep quiet, mustn't talk. So anyway, she said, oh, your mother is a stupid thing. She doesn't know what she's talking about. You must talk. You must say what you want to say. So anyway, now she kept on prompting her to speak. So one day she said, I must say something. See, she's asking the mother-in-law, Ma, you know, if your son dies, will you arrange for my second marriage? You know, if your son dies, I'm widowed now, will you arrange for me to get married again? So the mother says, no, I think what your mother said was right. So some people don't know what to say, right? I don't say all women, I can't generalize now, but some people are like that, they don't know what to say when. So anyway, you will get this type of inconsistency in women. And I firmly believe this inconsistency, this deficiency in this woman is a blessing for you. Really, it's a blessing for you. Now, you may ask, how it's a blessing? I ask you, any man that is sitting here, I ask you, I confine you to a home, you must just stay here. If you're moving, you must tell me. Will you last for more than 2 days? Forget 2 days, more than 1 day. You confine yourself to this house, don't move out of this house without my permission. A Muslim woman, 99% are doing the same thing. Aren't they doing it? They confine themselves to the house, they move, they tell the husband, and then they leave. Can you do that? If you confine, say, hey, this is prison. Now, they are doing it all the time. They confine themselves to the house. If they're going anywhere,
not without the husband's consent. Right? Don't they do it? They do it. So Allah Ta'ala made them like that. They can keep themselves comfortable in that. In that system, they can keep themselves comfortable. So really, I feel it's a blessing that they are deficient. If they were intelligent like you, then they would be your equal. When they are your equal, then it's difficult for you to rule over them. And in any institution, in anything, you need someone to be the ruler, someone to be the ruled. You can't have all bosses, all chiefs you can't have, you can't have all Indians, right? You have to have some Indians and some chiefs. Then the thing will work, right? So this was the first thing that Rasulullah had advised, Amlik alayka lisanak, control your tongue. You be in control of your tongue. Not just control your tongue, but you be in control of your tongue. How much of disaster this tongue brings about, just the tongue and the disaster that it brings. See, they say that shaitan doesn't do so much of wrong. The greater wrong is done by the nafs. Shaitan is just like the agent, you see. The boss is the nafs. The real boss is the nafs. Shaitan is just the agent. He's just the rep, you see. He just collect the orders, he'll just give you an idea. But who's doing the real planning and the working? The real working is the nafs. So the nafs is even more dangerous than the shaitan as well. As an illustration they gave on whether it's real or not real, one person mounted a camel, you see. So the shaitan prompted him to kiss the camel's mouth, you know, with lust, you see. Lust, you do strange things, very strange, stupid things you may do. With lust now, go and kiss the thing's face. So obviously with lust, go and kissing is not right. To go and kiss with lust is not right. But now shaitan had prompted him to do it, incited him. Now the nafs is thinking, that thing's neck is so long, right? Now how to pull the face towards me and kiss the face? Understand? I'm mounted on the camel. That thing's neck is so long, over one meter that thing's neck is. Now, when that thing is so long, then how to get the face towards me and kiss the thing? So the nafs says, don't worry, I'll sort that out. So what the nafs did, he caught on hold of a nice big green branch, nice leaves and all that, and he put it towards the thing's mouth, that thing's eating. When the thing got the taste of that, so he started pulling it slowly, the thing is moving its face. He brought it towards himself, the thing came right near him, so he got the thing's face and he kissed it. Now this, hey, astaghfirullah, what I did, what a wrong thing I did. So shaitan complimented him, shaitan said, hey, I also was wondering how you're going to do it. So shaitan actually is just the rep. The real boss is the nafs. The nafs calls the shots. So try and control the nafs, you understand? Don't just blame the shaitan all the time. He'll just give the suggestions. But who is doing the actual work is the nafs. The nafs is even more smart than the shaitan as well. It's a stupid thing. He is stupid. Because he only thinks short term. He doesn't think long term. He thinks short term. So anyway, what we're getting at today, by the grace of Allah Ta'ala, is that this fitna, and what do you do at the time of fitna? One is that you be the control of your tongue. You control your tongue. Don't let that thing control you. Right? This late Chota Mota, Marhum, Rahmatullah Alayh, his family was very close to our family people. So she says, when the day she got married, I'm talking about 1950s, 1960s, when she got married, though her elder brother was Maulana Yunus's father, her elder brother advised her, okay, Ben, you know, when you have to do anything or say anything, then taan vichar kar, karine pachi karje. Anything you have to do or say, think three times, and then do it. Don't just jump into anything without thinking. You're doing anything, then you're saying anything, then think thrice before you get into it. Anything you're doing. Now, she says, I was getting frustrated with my brother. Everything I must do is repeating that advice all the time. Now, it's my marriage day. I'm supposed to be excited and happy about the whole thing. And he's telling me, no, tan vichar, three thoughts, all the time, three thoughts. Then when this married life started off, then I realized what was the beauty of his advice. At that time I couldn't understand. See, now you don't think and you act with impulse, you create problems for yourself. Now if man has got, say, 2,000 rand salary for the month, right, he's got. And I saw a nice pair of shoes, on impulse he just bought that thing. Now, that thing, 2,000 rand, 2,000, he bust it. Where's he going to get rent? What is he going to do for the wife and the children? What is he going to do for the water and the electricity? For his unpaid account, what is he going to do? So he didn't think before he jumped onto this. He didn't think. Now he brought so much of problems for himself, for his family, for everybody he brought problems. On impulse, you just say something. You got angry over something. And you just said something. You're a dog. Or you're rubbish, whatever. Now to retract and to reverse that statement becomes very difficult. That person's got it locked in his memory, that this was the statement that you made against me. This is what you think about me. So this was the thought that you have about me. So he's got it locked in his memory. Now he can't forget that. Why did it happen? Because you acted on impulse. You didn't think, now I'm going to do this. What's going to be the long term? The short term, alright, I will get it off my chest. I'll tell him what I want to tell him. But the long term, now he's going to get it locked in his memory. This is what this person thinks about me. So he'll have ill feeling against you for the rest of his life. Okay, this is what this person told me on this day. See? So this is when you don't think before you say something. You don't think before you do something. You just go and do it. Just go and do it. In fact, this whole modernism is taking us in that direction, you know. Just do it. I saw the sign, Nike sign, and just do it. So they're leading you on the sign, just do it. You got money, just go and bust it. You feel like doing something, just do it. So it's taking you in that direction that you don't think. Now then why will Allah give you brains? If you must just do it, then what's the difference between you and animal? You'll see an animal, right? You'll see Spingabee's monkeys on the road. You'll see the grandfather, the father, the grandchild, maybe perhaps the grandchild also you'll find. And it's free fall. The grandchild is with the mother is with the daughter, son, they do everything and anything in front of everybody. So they just do it. They don't think anything about it. So this is animal behavior. They just do all these things here in front of everybody. Everybody. No shame. So we can't reduce ourselves like to monkeys to that level. Obviously you can't do that. Allah has given us respect, haya, shame. So before we take the step, we think about it. Think, what is the short term? What is the long term? If I do this, what's going to happen? If I don't do it, what's going to happen? You thought and then you did it, then very seldom you have any regrets. There's no remorse. But you don't think and you just take the step, then obviously there's going to be regrets, there's going to be painful memories, right? So, amlik alayka lisanak. This is the first advice, that just control your tongue. You be in control of your tongue. So many problems you can just avoid. I was just giving one incident of Muhammad Yahya Sahib, rahmatullahi, the respected father of Hazrat Sheikh Al-Hadith Sahib, rahmatullahi. So in Gango, he was doing everything. He was writing the fatwas. As Gango Ramtai would dictate, he would write that, arrange for all the mehman that are coming in, to all the needs and the requirements. So he was doing everything. So he had a very busy schedule. Then whatever has to be written is writing also. And in the Kutub Khana, he had one person working, wasn't working as a worker, but as a friend, just to come and help him. Not as a worker. Munshi Muhammad Hussain Sahib. So, one person came from the blues, and he's insulting Maulana Muhammad Yahya Sahib in a very bad way, very derogatory way, he's insulting him. So Muhammad just looked once, and he carried on his work. He was writing, doing some writing. 1 second, he just looked and he carried on. He, swearing, abusive, carried on for a couple of minutes and he went away. Second day, he came and did the same thing. Well, again, he carried on his work. He's not paying attention to this person yet. Third day, the man did the same thing. Now, this Munshi Hussain, he couldn't hold himself. He says, well, You're so shameful, so shameless. This man is insulting you. He's running you down. He's swearing you. He's hurling abuse against you. And you just keeping quiet. You don't have a mouth. You don't have a tongue in your mouth. What? Can't you say anything? So, Mulana heard this from his friend, that Munshi Hussain. And he carried on his work also. Same, like how that person was abusing. He carried on, didn't pay any attention, just carried on. Father Munshi Hussain got angry. He said, "You're treating me like this, you're your enemy. I'm your friend. I'm telling you in sincerity and you're treating me like your enemy." So Mulana still carried on. When now he couldn't hold his anger, then Mulana says to this friend of his, Munshi Muhammad Hussain, "All right, you got a mouth. If he insults you, then you can reply. Me, just leave me alone. You've got a mouth, and if he does insult you, then you reply, finish, class." But now, it's such an easy way to overcome a situation. Just keep quiet. You keep quiet, you overcame the situation. But where you open your mouth, you lost out. You just open your mouth, and you lost out. Just keep quiet. When things become uncontrollable, they're not manageable, they're not within your reach. I know one friend of mine, he also likes to talk too much. And it put him into problems, serious problems put him to. He was telling me that he was crossing the border, India-Pakistan, some 10-15 years ago. So, I was going by plane. Now they are waiting in the queue there. They are waiting for their passports to be stamped, see. So in the meanwhile, in the queue there was a white man, and there was a black man before. So the custom officer, he allowed the white man to come first, he stamped his passport, and he let him go through. So this friend of mine, what he did, he went and shouted the custom officer, "What's this? This man is first, the black man was first, why did you allow the white to come first? Oh, you got a big mouth." So he blacklisted him straight away. Now 15 years or 12 years have passed, he's crying to get re-entry into India, he can't get it, he's blacklisted. So when a situation is not within your control, within your reach, rather you just keep quiet. You rather keep quiet, now he's crying to go. Active in Jamaat and all that, he's crying to go, but he can't just go. We see that one error. 15 years now he can't go. So when it's not within your reach, then you rather just keep quiet. Don't you become like the clever person. Rather keep quiet and let carry on. Then in a situation where you are in control of situation, then you rectify, in total control. You can do things as you want to. Then you bring it and correct it, rectify it. But in that situation, you're going to open your mouth, you'll just make things even worse. So this is the first thing that Rasulullah SAW advises us, that you be in control of your tongue, whether it's at home, whether it's the masjid, in your business, wherever it is. But you be in control of your tongue and you see things will definitely work out for you. It's a short-term sacrifice, very short-term. But the good that comes after it is phenomenal. You know, it's very short to keep quiet. You'll hear the insult, they'll abuse you, they'll insult you. You keep quiet and you carry on, just ignore it. And you'll see the results that come afterwards. That's something very great and exciting. Allah Ta'ala grant us tawfiq.
So now we discuss some of the adab of eating. That is the sunnah of Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam to eat on the floor and on the dasturkhan. Before eating, one should wash his hands. Thereafter, a person should recite Bismillah or Bismillahi wa ala barakatillah and then eat with the right hand. And when eating, if there is only one variety of food, then a person should eat from in front of him. A person shouldn't eat from the middle of the plate or the other end of the plate. Then if few people are sitting together and they are waiting to dish out the food, then allow the most senior person amongst everyone for him to dish out first, and thereafter the other people should dish out. And if any morsel falls onto the dasturkhan, then pick it up, dust it, and eat it after that. And don't lean and eat. Person should sit forward and eat. And there are one of three postures which appear in the hadith that a person should sit and eat. That one is either in the tashahud position, how we normally sit in namaz, or either that a person sits with on one leg and one leg is raised, or either that a person sits as if squatting and with his posterior on the ground with both his knees raised. So these are the three postures that a person can sit and eat. Then if the food is not to one's taste, then a person shouldn't pick out the fault of the food. Rather, he should just be patient and either leave out that food or eat whatever he needs to eat and continue. And upon finishing, then a person should lick his fingers and recite the masnoon dua, that Alhamdulillah alladhi at'amana wa saqana wa ja'alana muslimin. And then a person should wash his hands after eating and clean his hands. And if at the beginning a person forgets to read Bismillah, then whenever a person remembers, then he should read Bismillahi awwalahu wa akhirahu.